This is the Daily Tech News for February 25th, 2014. I'm Tom Merritt, and joining me today is my co-host from East Meets West, and he's a little befuddled because on East Meets West, we have no rules, and the Daily Tech News show is the opposite. Mr. Roger Chang, how's it going?
It's going great. Thank you very much for having me on your show. Yes, I am very unused to the rather regimented schedule of your of this particular show.
We keep it moving, man. We keep things in line. Roger is usually the regimenter, actually. He's a TV and web video producer himself. You can follow him at Jolly Roger on the internets. But Roger, shall we start off with some headlines?
Yes. Sounds good.
Ars Technica and really the entire internet are reporting on Mt. Gox going offline. The site has been replaced by a message that transactions are closed for the time being for the protection of users. A joint statement from other Bitcoin exchanges accuse Mt. Gox of being a bad actor, in their words, and promising that they will make Bitcoin more secure and easier to use for customers in the future. Unlike Mt. Gox, they're distancing themselves. A leaked set of slides purports to show Mt. Gox plans to name a new CEO and possibly sell the company to some new investors, relaunching under the name Gox. That domain name, Gox.com, is owned by Mt. Gox's CEO, and the record was updated just yesterday, February 24th.
If I had any Bitcoin, I'd be nervous, but I don't.
If I had a Bitcoin for everybody who said they're nervous, it'd be hard to tell how much I have because it keeps fluctuating, but it's around $500. Yep. TechCrunch reports Apple has released their OS X patch for security bug that meant all data secured in SSL was susceptible to that man-in-the-middle attack from a nearby hacker. We were talking about that earlier. The bug was patched for iOS over the weekend. Anyone running OS X 10.9 is urged to update the OS as soon as possible, or at least don't use Safari until you do get it updated. The patch also adds audio-only capability to FaceTime on the desktop, so you can just have those audio conversations with people.
And to think that whole issue was because of an errant go-to.
Yes, I see the hashtag go-to fail. I bet Microsoft feels left out because every time they have a security vulnerability, they don't get a hashtag.
Yeah, and they don't get a comment either. Get it?
See what you did. TechCrunch has the new BlackBerry announcements, including the much-rumored Foxconn-made phone. They call it the Z3 over there.
Zed.
The touchscreen smartphone has a 5-inch QHD display, 1.2 gigahertz dual-core Snapdragon 400 processor, 1.5 gigabytes of RAM, 8 gigabytes of storage, and, I found this interesting, an internal FM radio.
So when the BlackBerry's not working, you can do something with it.
The Z3 will launch in Indonesia first. BlackBerry also announced a 3.5-inch display phone with a QWERTY keyboard called the Q20. Have you left the BlackBerry pack, Roger?
Yes, I am now a Nexus 4. I was going to be a Nexus 5 guy, but then I decided to wait for the one after that.
Gotcha. GigaOM has the story on the TiVo founders, Michael Ramsey and Jim Barton's new venture called Qplay. We've mentioned the rumors about that before. Well, now it's official. For $49, you can get a device that is controlled by an iPad app and sends video to your television. The spin is that you control something called cues. You can create a cue with multiple videos, or you can select from other users or even companies. The cues are curated collections of videos that just keep playing. So you get that lean back experience, kind of like channel surfing. Video services like YouTube, Vimeo, and Vine are supported at launch, although they do say they would like to add Netflix and Hulu support afterwards.
I wonder if they trademarked cues.
They spell it just with the letter Q.
Because it's really just a fancy name for a playlist.
The word, yeah. Recode reports T-Mobile added 1.6 million subscribers in Q4, but lost $20 million, or 3 cents a share, on revenue of $6.83 billion. All those snotty ads cost money, man. Still, they only added 61,000 subscribers a year ago, so bumping that up to 1.6 million, those expensive ads seem to have worked.
That's a good investment.
Yeah. Well, if it turns into profit eventually, it's a good investment.
You know, I mean, you have the bodies. You have potential people to milk.
Yeah, that's true. You've got, wow, that just sounds, now you made it sound like that cattle farm that's on the five. Just bodies waiting to
cows.
Be by John Legere. Or Legere. Motorola took to Twitter to announce the company is working on a watch to come out this year, and they also promised a new version of Moto X, maybe in late summer. They were a little cagey about that. Motorola also announced Moto Maker, that's the program to customize your Motorola phone, is coming to Western Europe and Mexico in the second quarter.
Didn't they just get bought up by Is it Lenovo?
Yeah, and maybe that's why they were announcing these things on Twitter, right? Because Lenovo is going to buy them, but I don't think it's quite done yet. So they're just saving money in the meantime. PC Mag reports Freescale Semiconductor introduced an ARM-based microcontroller unit smaller than a golf ball's dimple.
That's pretty small.
For use in embedded devices that make up the Internet of Things. The Kinetsys KLO3 MCUs can be used for the smart home systems, wearable tech, even in swallowable pills for health data collection. Smaller the better, especially if it's going to be in my gut.
Potentially, or they can make a suppository if they can't get it that small.
No, really? You have to... Our producer, Jenny, and Habichuela Condulce are like twinsies in the mind. They were both taken with the article. Jenny found the CNET one. Habichuela Condulce found the HuffPo one about selfies spreading lice. Marcy McQuillan, a lice treatment expert who runs two lice treatment centers in California, says she's seen a dramatic uptick in the incidence of lice among young people and blames head bumping in selfies. It's not a very rigorous study, and CNET did consult dermatologist Dr. Parati Mimirani, among others. He's from the Kaiser Permanente Medical Group in Vallejo, told CNET that drug resistance, decreased surveillance, or even just decreased awareness of the problem are just as likely, if not more likely, to be the cause in the uptick.
Yeah, I would say parents wash their kids' hair on a regular basis. Try that. Hygiene.
But you know, selfies, bumping heads, it's not long enough is what some of them are saying. Time for some news from you. Pete C went to our subreddit, posted a ZDNet story to the subreddit that got some upvotes. Got a good handful of upvotes. Seems Ars Technica noted the security team at FireEye developed a proof of concept app that could run in the background of a mobile device and log your keystrokes. FireEye originally posted that they had successfully got the app through Apple's App Store, but that post has since been removed. The defense for you for now is to be careful what apps you download and install on your iPhone and only allow apps you trust to run in the background.
Something I think should go for pretty much any app you download.
Yeah, exactly. And Sewell, too, submitted the Ars Technica article on Stephen Elop becoming the head of Microsoft's Devices and Studios Group once Microsoft's acquisition of Nokia's handset division is completed. That's expected sometime by the middle of this year. Devices and services are the folks that make the Xbox. They make the Surface. The Nokia handset business is going to increase that department quite a bit when it falls under that division after the acquisition. Julie Larson Green, who currently heads the Devices and Services division, would have reported to Elop, but instead she's going to become Chief Experience Officer of the My Life and Work team once Elop joins the club.
So how do you shorten Chief Experience Officer?
CXO, which is the generic term for any C-level executive. So they kind of just genericized her.
Yeah. She's called the XO.
Yeah. Excellent. Number one, Google has set some roadblocks to distracted driver legislation, according to Reuters. Roger Chang found this story.
Yeah, it's a very interesting. A handful of states in the United States are trying to pass legislation that would restrict drivers from doing things like texting on their phone, basically doing anything that would distract them from the activity of driving, which frankly is a good thing. And Google feels that perhaps a little excessively that they feel that Google Glass, you know, those really cool glasses that you wear with the little TV screen in the corner would fall under that and therefore, you know, be disallowed. You know, I find it somewhat troubling that, you know, I understand the need for the advancement of technology, but at the same time, I'd rather have people's eyes focused ahead on the road and where they're driving rather than, you know, trying to catch whatever is popping up in their little in the corner of their eye, whether it's email, someone saying, "Hey, you forgot your lunch or something." You know,
don't
focus on driving.
Laws about distracted driving already.
Yeah, it's very piecemeal. It's state to state, and depending on the jurisdiction that you're in.
All right, that's a look at the headlines. Really want to thank our patrons, folks. If you are one of the folks who are backing us on Patreon.com. Have a good feeling about yourself right now. This is your show. You're making this happen. Thanks to you for seeing value in the show and giving a little of that value back. We really appreciate that. Patreon.com/AceDetect or Patreon.com and just search Tom Merritt if you want to find out more information on backing the show. If you're one of the people who's like, gosh, I wish I could back the show. I just, I don't, That's fine. If you're telling people about the show, you get to have that good feeling as well. Thank you for supporting us. There are 2,835 patrons out there. We're getting closer and closer all the time to that next milestone goal. So keep spreading the word. Let's talk about Mt. Gox, because people have been saying, hey, I want to pay in bitcoins. Maybe that's not such a good idea anymore. We talked about the site going down. We talked about the bad actor accusation. That leaked slide decks seems to be legitimate. GigaOm said they've confirmed it. A couple other outlets could not confirm it. But essentially what it describes is a plan to shut down Mt. Gox for a month, get rid of the CEO, have him step down, replace him, then launch a new platform and a new brand called Gox. They say by February 25th, but it's February 25th. In fact, it's almost February 26th in Japan, so that hasn't happened. The reason, of course, is that they've lost $55 million US plus 744,408 bitcoins with assets not enough to cover that. They apparently, according to the slide deck, only have 2,000 bitcoins. This is all because of the malleability problem, the transaction malleability problem. Roger?
Yes.
Before we get into this too much, how big of a deal is this? I mean, the internet's going crazy because bitcoins were very buzzy.
But, you know, it's interesting. You know, one of the criticisms leveled against Bitcoin as quote-unquote a digital currency is that, you know, as currencies go, it's not a national currency, say, as the U.S. dollar or the British pound. It isn't backed by a sovereign government in the respect that, you know, if you give a dollar, unless the government totally goes bankrupt or something, it's gonna honor that dollar or hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars or whatever. I mean, you don't have that level of recourse with Bitcoin. On the same hand, it's also what makes it so appealing because it is independent from governments and therefore government action, whether it's something like I need to buy something that may be illicit in my home country. I don't want to be traced. I can buy it using this virtual currency, and I don't have to worry about, you know, the feds breathing down my neck. But in terms of the public in general, I think this just basically casts another pall over it, like it's something that's only used by shady people, and therefore, you know, all this is just, you know, part and parcel of what happens when you let people buy illicit drugs and activities and contraband online through the Silk Road. Because anytime you hear the term Bitcoin, you always hear it combined with something else that doesn't sound very legitimate. And so I think it just continually fosters this very negative view on it. So it could, you know, at least in the short term, it will still kind of relegate the currency to that corner of the market until such time where I think, you know, it takes a handful of large national governments to accept it in mass, where you can kind of gain that legitimacy.
Well, what does accept it mean? Like, I don't think you can regulate it the way you regulate regular currency, because the government can't actually issue bitcoins. I mean, they can mine them just like anybody else can, but they can't really control the supply.
Well, so I accept, I mean, where you can base, for example, if I take a US dollar and I go pay off my bill at Comcast, or go to the post office, they have to accept it as payment, because that's it, you know, under the threat of, you know, state violence, you need to accept it as a medium of exchange. I can't say the same thing if I come in with a gold bar. I say, this is worth, you know, $10,000. I'm going to pay off my Comcast bill. They don't have to accept that. That isn't legal tender for that kind of exchange. You know, the guy may or may not accept it. But, you know, the government can't say, okay, you need to accept this gold bar to pay off, you know.
Well, I think it's highly unlikely that any government anytime soon is going to say you have to accept bitcoins either.
Yeah.
They would do gold before that.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And I think that's part of, you know, the legitimacy issue in the public side is that, well, you know what? Hey, my government doesn't trust it. Why should I? And, you know, oops, sorry.
But, well, no, I'm just thinking because governments, they don't back gold anymore, but yet nobody has a problem with gold. In fact, people are saying they should gold back all the currency. Some people say.
Part of that's historical. I mean, gold has been such a long period since You know, I don't think there's a time before people can remember gold wasn't used as a medium of exchange in some capacity, especially from regions that suffered, you know, a large amount of turmoil during the Japanese invasion of China. You know, the things that people grabbed that were valuable were gold jewelry and jade. And those are the two things they kept with you because it was portable, it was valuable, and you could be assured that at some point you would be able to exchange it for food, clothing, you know, some sort of accommodation, maybe a ship or a plane ride out of the country to somewhere safer.
Sure. And I think we'd all agree Bitcoin has a long way to go before it's felt to be that much of a reserve of value. And we've seen it lose about half its value over the last couple months, but it hasn't tanked. A lot of the headlines early on were Mt. Gox has gone down, everything's in the toilet, this is the end of Bitcoin. It's stabilized, seems to have stabilized at least today, around $500. And then Barry Silbert, who's the CEO of Second Market, the place where people can trade their options before a company goes public, he's going to open a Bitcoin exchange in New York. You've got a lot of folks kind of riding to the aid, although you do have New York State head financial regulator Benjamin Lowski calling for some regulation. So that could also stabilize the market if people say, okay, the feds are going to come in, and all those people who are concerned about what Roger's saying can now rest easy because they think that the government will help stabilize this. There's a lot of venture capital money tied up in this. So I feel like somebody with influence is going to figure out how to make this last. The question is Mt. Gox gone or not? And how much of a drag, how much of a setback is that?
You know, it could be big, but but there's always people willing to invest. I mean, the best way to think of Bitcoin is more of a commodity than thinking of it as a currency. You see this with anything where whether it's like futures, pork bellies, coal, iron, steel, gold,
fur pelts.
Those things constantly go up and down. During the great real estate crash in the U.S. around late 2007, early 2008, you know, there was a spike in the value of gold because people were running to it. And in this case, you know, all these things are valuable. There's nothing innate in gold, for example, that makes it truly valuable. You can't eat it. You can't fashion a strong enough weapon to defend yourself against
it. It doesn't really do much for you.
There is value if there's enough people who believe it have value and are willing to put their money where their mouth is, and that's what they're doing. So really what you're trying to do is manage expectations as well as people's fears. If you do that, the market will stabilize and say, like, you know, they got things under control. It's the same way the way the feds were printing money, because you wanted to make sure that people weren't kind of screaming, oh my God, the government's going bust, I can't get my money out of the bank, you know, and basically repeat the 1920s. And so, you know, if they're doing all the right things and kind of basically reassuring the market of current investors and basically painting Mt. Gox as kind of an aberration, you know, an outlier where people are just shady, not because Bitcoin was shady, just because that the people running that particular office or that company were of the unscrupulous type, you know, they would probably be, I think they would get traction probably later, probably within the next 3 to 4 months.
I wonder if what we're going to see, if I had to guess, I guess is what I'm going to say. If I had to guess, what we're going to see are these exchanges resisting regulation, trying to stave it off, but saying we're going to self-insure. We're going to guarantee deposits. We're going to do something not quite FDIC level, but we're going to do something to kind of reassure folks who are depositing their money with it. That's actually what the slides say that are leaked from Mt. Gox, if those are real. It's a plan to kind of gain trust back and provide people to say, don't pull your coins out yet, because frankly, we don't have all of them, but we think we can figure out how to get them to you eventually if we can slow it down. And I think the other exchanges will say, well, that's just silly. Bring your coins to us if you have them, because we'll guarantee that you'll get your deposit back, et cetera, et cetera. I think you're going to have to see something along those lines.
You know, it's interesting you're bringing up the whole FDIC aspect, the insurance aspect. I think if there was, at least amongst the majority of Bitcoin operators out there, and they kind of combined and created kind of an insurance facility, saying that in the event such and such happens, you know, we carry a parallel record or duplicate record, and
kind of therefore like a standards agency, right?
Yeah, essentially,
That's interesting.
You know, it kind of goes back to what you said. I mean, you need to keep people's trust.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole reason why we have the FDIC for U.S. banks, because, you know, the whole idea is not to get people panicking and then pulling all their assets out, which is, you know, the least ideal situation, especially for Bitcoin. You know, it's a commodity. It's, you know, if you want to invest in it and you can make money off it, great. But just understand what you're getting into. It's not, you know, people used to think the same thing about real estate. If I buy into real estate,
I
have
a
good investment. It'll never go down. It's great.
That's true. And that's the real point. There's some people in the chat room, and this is not an unfamiliar comment of like, I just don't understand Bitcoin. And I think the reason it's hard to understand for some people is that it is a commodity. So if you say like, it's like fur pelts, it makes it a little easier, but they're like, yeah, but it's not a fur pelt. It's not a bar of gold. It's an imaginary thing. And then you have to really dive down into, well, the encryption and the security and this and that. That leads us back into transaction malleability. The upshot is, without getting into explaining all of that, what Mt. Gox did was rely on a transaction ID that is known to be spoofable. Spoofable isn't exactly the right word, but it's known not to be reliable, and it can throw off your accounting if you use it as your only way of confirming a transaction. And that's why the other exchanges are saying, you guys didn't do a good job. It was incompetent. And no wonder you lost possibly millions of Bitcoins over 2 years because your accounting systems were using these false transaction IDs.
You know, I mean, the best way to think of it is a collectible. I mean, for people to kind of get their head around it.
A collectible, think of it, but it's like, digital. I think that's what confuses them. Like a collectible piece of software, I guess.
Think of it as like a digital Beanie Baby or baseball cards. Those things don't have a set value. Those values are set on a regular basis by the market for the demand, whether or not it's something people want to buy from you. If that's not there, Beanie Baby's worth whatever, you know, it costs to make it or less, probably. But, you know, during the, you know, heyday of its period, you know, you got some, like, special designer Beanie Baby. It was, like, $300 to $400. It's just a sack of beads, you know.
And then people just have to wrap their heads around the fact that you can send a digital Beanie Baby to someone and only they can have it after that. And there's a whole public ledger that's available to say that person has it and not that person. So they're not replicable. And that's where Mt. Gox got in trouble. They didn't look at the public ledger. They were looking at a transaction ID. Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's check the calendar real quick. RSA going on, the very controversial conference because of RSA's involvement with the NSA, continues through February 28th. Not too late to register because I think they had some cancellations. There's also TrustyCon coming up February 27th. It's a gathering of security researchers, practitioners, and citizens to talk about the technical, legal, and ethical underpinnings of a stronger social contract between users and technology. TrustyCon apparently is all sold out. So,
TrustyCon, that just sounds like an amalgam of The Simpsons and the Colbert Report.
Yeah, it kind of does. But it's all the people who canceled it at RSA going and meeting up in protest. Twitch streaming coming to the Xbox One on March 11th. If you've been wanting to watch Pokemon or any of the other spinoffs that have happened, online gaming on Twitch by crowd or any of the standard Twitch stuff, any of the esports, you're going to be able to do it on your Xbox One March 11th.
Nice.
And Senate hearings are set to begin March 26th regarding the Comcast-Time Warner cable merger.
Oh, that one has me scared. Yeah. Comcast is way too much.
Let me save my thoughts on that, because I want to get to our pick of the day real quickly. This is my attempt to say, hey, here's some stuff I use and I love, and I'm not getting paid to tell you about it. It's just stuff I like. I go running a lot, and I use both the Nike Plus and Runkeeper apps. I keep using the Nike Plus. I want to switch to Runkeeper, but Nike Plus has got me locked in because I have some friends on there and I have this whole history of data. So I kind of want to keep that history, but I've added Runkeeper. My plan, I guess, in my head is eventually I'll have enough history on Runkeeper that the older history on Nike won't matter. But I run them both at the same time. And actually, I was worried that that wouldn't work. It works fine. And Runkeeper allows me a little more flexibility. I can do things like jogging. If I move to a different phone, I don't have to get rid of the app because Runkeeper is available on a lot of platforms. So check it out, runkeeper.com or Nike Plus. I actually like Nike Plus. I got a lot of friends on Nike Plus too, and it's fun to see who's winning. Julio Aprea, man, that guy ran like 70 kilometers this month. He's a madman.
So I don't run. Julio, I don't physically run.
You don't have anything to run from.
Roger, no, or two at this point. Years.
That's great. Got a few messages of the day to talk about. One from Adi. We've been having a conversation, Adi and I, and he says, I'm not 100% sure Netflix will be saving money by moving lots of traffic off their interconnections because companies like Cogent probably have tiered rates per volume of usage. So if Netflix takes a lot of traffic off Cogent, their per gigabyte price may increase. I would doubt they would have done it if that's the case, but okay, that's a fair point. Regardless, however, Adi says, I would assume they'd have to do this deal because they can't afford their quality to drop in the Comcast gated community. At the same time, Comcast itself is ramping up its own competing stream picks and online store solutions. And that's what concerns most people about this, right? Meantime, Ron has a similar note. He's talking about my UPS truck analogy where I was comparing transit providers like Cogent to UPS. He said, as I watched you use UPS in your talk about the Netflix Comcast deal, it became clear to me the simple answer would be just admit Comcast and all ISPs are common carriers just like UPS. Here's a packet. Deliver it. Sender pays. And if your packet must get there as soon as possible, you pay a little more because of your special delivery need. What am I missing here? What you're missing is that they decided not to classify ISPs as common carriers because the lobbyists got to them. That's what you're missing. What do you make of this whole Netflix peering with Comcast, paid peering deal?
You know, I understand why they did it because, you know, Netflix is so dependent on its on-demand streaming services. But at the same time, it's also giving in to essentially what Comcast wants, and it's incredibly disconcerting because, like you said, Comcast is not just a carrier; they're also competing, right? It's just that there's this kind of conflict of interest that you can see literally 100 miles away, but everyone's literally ignoring it because you know when money greases the palms and stuff like that, it's very easy for things to get by. And there's a level of pain I know that's going to come down in the next couple of years because of that ruling, especially when it comes to other other streaming providers like Vudu and potentially Hulu as well. And it's just like, you know, is this really kind of what we want, where we go back to kind of the robber baron days where, you know, you had J.P. Morgan and Carnegie.
The railroads, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a train wreck waiting to happen, and I am one that is not very particularly happy about the decision that was made, especially in regards to Comcast.
I think the Netflix Comcast thing would be perfectly fine if Comcast wasn't Comcast, but I think you hit the nail on the head. They have competing interests and they're a monopoly. The deal itself between Netflix and Comcast seems perfectly fine. Netflix is a big, big data provider, and pairing with somebody like Comcast makes perfect sense. If the marketplace were such that Comcast didn't have all the leverage or competing services, I wouldn't blink an eye at it. The fact of the matter is, what is Comcast able to do with that leverage? And was it a fair deal with Netflix? All of those questions are arisen. And that common carrier thing that Ron brought up is starting to really turn heads. And people are starting to realize, well, wait a minute. All the lobbyists who used to work for the telephone and cable industry that have become FCC chairmen, including the current one, Tom Wheeler, who is the president of both the NCTA and the CTIA, have decided that the internet, for some reason, is not like the telephone networks, and therefore they're not going to regulate it as a common carrier. The idea with telephone networks, in some, is that we get to say whatever we want on the telephone, and they can't regulate that part of it. That's the way the internet should be as well. Nilay Patel wrote a huge article today arguing this point. I'm going to quote one little bit from it. It's got a curse word in the title, folks. If you go look it up, don't be too offended. He makes great points. And here's the line that caught my eye. Internet access is a utility, a commodity that should get better and faster and cheaper over time. Anyone who says otherwise is lying for money.
Yep. Totally. Imagine if your gas, your utility company that provides you electricity or gas, for say electricity, they also make consumer electronics. They make dishwashers, they make dryers, they make washing machines, they make TVs, they make Blu-ray players, they make video game consoles or whatever. don't you think at some points, like, yeah, we're going to create our devices that only use our special socket that gives us, you know, a reliable electricity where everyone else gets kind of like iffy depending on what you buy. And the fact is, it's not just the fact that Comcast has StreamPix and online stores. They also own NBC and, you know, they own various different cable networks. And it's you know, when people used to bellyache about you know, having a media conglomerate, I mean, I think this is the very example of one, right, growing in front of you that came from a non-media outlet source but started as a cable provider going to all these different markets. Oh, just creepy. Very chilling.
Yeah. So, I mean, write Tom Wheeler, tom.wheeler@fcc.gov, or give him a call. Neil's got the phone number. You can talk to an FCC agent and lodge your opinion. If you disagree with me, you should log your opinion either way. But this is an issue that is reaching the crest of its importance, right? And the idea that there is a net neutrality open order that's been kicked out of court specifically because the court says, well, you could regulate this, but you didn't classify them as an open carrier. I mean, it's a judge speaking sense, just saying, like, you guys seem to be trying to dance around this for some reason. Why don't you just make them what they are? And a lot of people are looking at this Netflix Comcast deal. They're looking at the Time Warner Cable Comcast merger, and they're saying, wait a minute, these things in and of themselves may not be bad, but the table isn't set evenly for them to not, you know, the normal checks that would stop something like this from being bad don't exist in the United States anyway.
And it's not even a court issue. It's just the fact that the FCC is failing to do its job in the way that it, at least it's designed or in spirit supposed to do, because, like, you know, like you were saying, I mean, there is just way too many conflicts of interest that people would find outlandish in any other venue, even politics. Like, people would just go up the wall, and that's, you let someone else who's been running the head of broadcast networks or whatever, and just waltz right in and take the reins of controls of the regulators seems a little absurd.
Well, thank you, Roger Chang, for joining me today. I felt like we got a little bit of East meets West.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Peppered into. No, I meant that as a good thing.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
Facebook.com/Raji.Chang. Any other place to follow you? Jolly Roger on Twitter.
Yeah. At Jolly Roger. Because there's a number of people who keep at Jolly Rogering me, and they're thinking it's a bar, and they've written very lewd and very odd things in their drunken stupors.
So Roger would like you to follow him, not because he needs the Twitter followers, but he needs people who understand who he is to reply. Okay. Daily Tech News Show shirts still available at slashloot.com. Also, don't forget, you have a voice in the stories. If you're one of those people like, I would like to back you on Patreon, I would like to buy a shirt, I cannot do those things right now, how else do I support the show? Submit some links, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com, or even just go in and vote on the links that are in there. It helps us put the show together directly every day. You can also email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 512-59-DAILY. That's 512-593-2459. And listen to the show live, alphageekradio.com. Visit the website, dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back tomorrow with Sean Hollister, West Coast editor at The Verge. See you then.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.